Chapter 8. Prepare to apologise to everyone for everything affected by your being so fucked up. Step 8. We made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Having altered my understanding of a higher power through the first three steps, and of myself through 4, 5, 6 and 7, my attention was turned to the damage I had done to others. There were a lot of people that had been harmed by my behaviour. One of the great challenges everyone faces with step 8 is distinguishing it from step 9. Step 9 is about making amends. Step 8 is about making a list and becoming willing. We don't reflect or project on what making the amends might be like or whether or not we want to make them while compiling the list. If you do that, it disrupts the process. The people that structured this program were masterful. They understood that if you envisaged making the amends while making the list, you would omit people from the list. It is a nimble piece of construction and we must abide by it. The second great challenge I found was one of forgiveness. Becoming willing to make amends to people I had harmed meant that in many cases I had to forgive any harms I believed they'd done to me. This is where we must understand what amends are for and what the word really means. Amend means to change or improve. While restitution, recompense or restoration is part of this process, the key is change. We do not want to be the same people anymore. We have acknowledged our way wasn't working. We have come to believe that we can be different. We've decided to become teachable. We've had a good, thorough look at ourselves. We've told someone else about it. We've become willing to get rid of the negative traits identified and we've asked humbly for them to be removed. So we want to change. It's hard to start anew if your past is littered with damage and your conscience cluttered with guilt and shame. What kind of self-help recital would this be if I overlooked the opportunity to tell you that guilt is about what you've done and shame is about who you are? Guilt and shame tether us to old ways of seeing and being. They are very difficult codes to rewrite. Steps 8 and 9 are integral to the process of shifting our perception of who we are. I'll give you some of my experience around this. In my step 4, which you are now beginning to understand is vital for progression and for the execution of all subsequent steps, I had a good many resentments against myself. Some were for things like not being good enough at football or not having a good enough body. But others were for harms I'd done other people, like myself for cheating on Elia, a girlfriend I was with for a few years when I was in my early 20s, or myself for not being present the third time my mum got cancer. With these resentments, I had to look exclusively at my own behaviour. What this means is I had to get over my previous perspective on these events. It is unhelpful to justify your own behaviour when making this list, to say, well, Elia should have had more sex with me, or I was on drugs, I didn't know what I was doing. Thinking of this kind prevents growth because I'm still validating the behaviour through continued justification. I look only at what I did. I cheated on Elia with one of her friends. I subjected her to much selfishness. I used her. With the resentment involving my mother, it's no use saying it's not my fault she got ill or I was only a kid, it's not my job to look after her or I hated my stepdad. These beliefs, these codes, are all impediments to improvement. There are even more complex resentments to consider. My dad and stepdad, two men who I believed had done me great wrong. When I was in a treatment centre for sexual addiction in my late 20s, one of the exercises was to write a letter to them that blessedly remains unsent, letting them know what I thought of them. In both cases, these were furious diatribes of undiluted rage. Reading them out before the group of other sex addicts sparked in me such volatile and uncontrollable rage that I spun around, picked up the chair I'd previously been sitting on and smashed it on the wall. This led to me almost being sectioned in a Philadelphia mental institution, which on the basis of my brief visit would not have been a cool place to be impounded. I felt that my stepdad despised me, that he made no effort to father me. There were a few physical altercations when I got older. Sufficient material for me to remain resentful. But what's the point in that? Why would I want to hold on to an emotion that hurts me, turning my body and spirit into a vessel for justifiable pain? This program helps me to change my perspective when what I would do unabated is justify my perspective staying the same. If you do what you've always done, you'll get what you've always got. If you want change. You have to make amends. This, in the case of my stepdad, meant two things, the first being forgiveness. This is pretty easy when you get into it. Here's how. He's just a human being like me. He is not perfect like me. It is not my job to adjudicate the world's people and supply them with a template for how they should be. In fact, it's none of my business. There is only one human being I'm in control of, and that is me, and that is where the effort must be concentrated. Forgiveness is a powerful spiritual tool. Without it, we are damned as individuals and as a people. Forgiveness means letting go. It means being willing to accept that we are all mortals, flawed and suffering, imperfectly made and trying our best, that sometimes there is a collision of instinct. He was trying to live his life, have a relationship with my mother, work nights in a job he didn't like, and support another man's son. He was doing his best. Am I unwilling to forgive? Am I determined that the world must be as I decree? Do I see a future in that way of thinking, especially when it's done nothing but bring me pain so far? What am I holding on to? What is gained by withholding forgiveness, for ruminating on a concluded event, by holding on to a bygone pain and wishing ill upon a man just like me? Nothing. Looking at my own life, it's clear how greatly I have erred. How can I expect forgiveness if I am unwilling to forgive? What of the few incidents in my life where I was transgressed against sexually? Do I have to ransack those events mentally, looking for novel ways to blame myself? Of course not. This is an opportunity, though, to amend my perception of those events and improve my life as a result. It is, of course, wrong that I was touched up by a man when I was 7 years old, and when looking at my part, I'm not seeking to minimize his responsibility. What I am doing is releasing myself from the pain I have been unconsciously carrying. So I don't have to say, like some awful 80s judge, that I was a terrible little flirt and bought it on myself. That would, of course, be nuts. What I can do is accept that this event happened, that it was not my fault, that it is over, it is not happening now, and not to allow it to continue to block my path to mental and spiritual clarity. By forgiving the perpetrator, I release myself. I can revise the event. I can see it as something that gives me more compassion and understanding. I can let go of it. There is no benefit to establishing an imaginary judicial system in my own mind where I carry out punishments to people who have wronged me. By letting go of this long-held inner drama, I become a little more liberated and useful. In essence, it's bad that it happened, but it's worse that I allow myself to be affected by it now. I cannot control the past, but I can control the present through forgiveness. I have heard beautiful tales of forgiveness, and its eminence in the spiritual life is often testified to. I have heard of mothers forgiving their son's murderer, befriending the killer, learning to understand and love the person who has cost them so dearly, knowing that there is no freedom without forgiveness. In the prayer of St. Francis, he says, "It is by forgiving that we are forgiven." And this means, I suppose, that there is a direct connection between the clemency we express and the world that we experience. That old-school staple, the Lord's Prayer, says, "Forgive us our trespasses as we forgive those who trespass against us." Freedom has a clause. It is forgiveness. Or as Gandhi would have it, "Be the change you want to see in the world." If we want forgiveness, we must forgive. Once I'd forgiven my stepdad, I was able to look more clearly at my own actions. I was rude, dismissive and disruptive. I stole, I lied and I manipulated. These are harms. So when I make a list of people I have harmed, he must be on it. I must say, I felt a kind of liberation having made this adjustment, a sense of freedom that came just from throwing off the yoke of my own tyrannizing perspective. It felt as if I'd advanced from the image I'd had of myself, life and circumstances as a boy to a liberating maturation, manhood. By maintaining a personal museum of resentments, we imprison ourselves within it. There are limitless ways that we may have harmed people or damaged institutions through our behaviour. Not all of them will be found on our Step 4 inventory. It's important that we are able to discern where real harm has been done, as opposed to projections of our own feelings of guilt and shame. It is important to undertake this process under guidance and with the support of a community to ensure that we are conducting it safely and prudently, the guiding principle being that we do not want to cause more harm. I now recall that I owe a financial amends to MTV. When I was first given a job with them, I was 24 years old and my addiction was in the ascendancy. I was steadily graduating to pretty radical chemical dependency, and working at MTV, based in Camden, London, was the perfect environment to incubate this condition. The building there, a jostling hub of glistening beauties, novelty desk toys, freebies, cool trainers and optimism, was right on the canal. The canal was continually patrolled by drug dealers. I skipped between these two worlds like Alice. I can't have been the only person who was using drugs there. Obviously, I probably wasn't the only person there with a drug problem. It's just that I was able to make my drug problem an effective contagion, interfering with the lives of anyone who came into contact with it. I was, as I am now, quite an intense and energetic person, so I was able to cause a lot of bother in a short period of time. When you're given a job as a presenter at MTV, they give you an account number for the London-based cab firm Addison Lee, ostensibly for use when you travel to and from work. In my case, this would have meant a couple of journeys a week. But when that account code hit my unrefined addict mind, I instantly decided that I would never be using public transport again. Not only that, I would never knowingly not use the account if the possibility existed. Pizzas, drugs, sex workers, and less troublingly, my mother were all freely ferried around using this service. It's a good example of how my mind works. If I'm given an opportunity, in this case the privilege of free travel to work, I will exploit it like the East India Trade Company plundering their colony. I had no inhibiting boundary or morality that could curb the use of those taxis. Only on one occasion, when someone else, my dear friend Andy Milligan, the producer who had first given me a job there, called from a Soho club asking if he could use the account, did I momentarily discover a modicum of morality. This cab account is for professional use. I shudder at the memory. Andy made it onto my Step 8 list, but MTV didn't. I was able to mentally justify my behaviour for over 14 years. They're a huge corporation. They don't care. They're basically the man. I was doing what any self-respecting drug addict would do, rinsing a good opportunity for all it was worth. I don't know how much money it was, or even who I'd pay it back to. None of these excuses are acceptable to me anymore. As I've indicated, this program and its benefits have come slowly to me. I am much more at the remedial end of the scale. Now though, with 14 and a half years clean and sober, and the sense of rectitude that that engenders, I have become willing to make amends to MTV. That means I'll have to find out who's the boss there now, call up and make an appointment, go in and tell them I'm an addict, part of my program is to make amends to people I have wronged and that I owe them an amends. But what I'm describing there is Step 9, which is naturally what follows Step 8. And having made a list of all that we have harmed and become willing to make amends to them all, this is where we now find ourselves. Step 8 is where we stop justifying our story. We stop clinging to the past. We recognize that if we want to go forward, we will need to change. Part of that change is forgiveness and the willingness to look at our lives and the world differently. Ask yourself, do I really want to change, or do I just want to justify staying the way that I am? Step 8 exercises. Prepare to apologize to everyone for everything affected by your being so fucked up. Go to russellbrand.com in the recovery section for a visual aid to this exercise. Go through your Step 4. Anybody or any institution you have harmed, add to a list. Remember that list you wrote of everyone you encountered? Anyone on there that causes a wrench in your gut when you read their name ought to be on the list. Don't worry if you feel they also harmed you. It's not a quiz show or the US justice system. It's a technique to cleanse the consciousness. The fourth column wrongs section of step four will also be of particular use. Then, for each item or more likely person on the list, note the name and what you did that was harmful, what you should have done instead, who suffered as a result, and how. Harm could be something obvious like, I stole their bike, or less tangible like, I robbed them of their peace of mind. Referring again to our step four, we use the seven areas of our lives that are affected, the third column, to discern what may have been affected in them. The second question helps us discern what we could have done instead. Sometimes the suffering caused was unavoidable, e.g., stopping my dog savaging sheep. What am I going to do? Not hold him back? His irritation, stroke suffering, was necessary. Leaving a bad relationship. I had to leave. I'd have gone crazy. The list ought to be devoid of analysis and speculation. Ideally, you should be able to clearly envisage the harm by reading it out. Dave, I took his bike. I should not have taken his bike. Not a bunch of speculation about Dave's inner drama surrounding the bike. The 12-step program has among its many epithets, keep it simple, knowing that we have a tendency to needlessly complicate stuff. This is important with this step. Once you've completed the list and the above questions, you have to ask yourself in each case, am I willing to make amends to this person? The purpose of this step is to free us from our attachment to old ways of thinking and grant us a new life. This willingness is an indicator of real change. It clearly involves forgiveness, which can be hard to accept, but is clearly a powerful tool in changing our perception of the past, our value as individuals, and moving freely into the future.